Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm the Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn in the Office of Mission Ministry Interfaith Dialogue at St. Francis College in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. My great pleasure to be back again with you today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times, motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as I utilize the information we provide today, take full accountability for the decisions you make and a resulting outcome. And one of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work lives. This is a very special time, April, the month which is designated as Stress Management Month. And as such, we are honored today to have with us a very, very special guest. His name is Andre Solo. Andre is the force behind Sensitive Refuge, the world's largest website for sensitive people. An author, researcher, and speaker, he is the co-founder and serves as the editor-in-chief of this great website, Sensitive Refuge. A highly sensitive person himself, for much of his life, he thought he had to hide it, before coming to understand it is one of humanity's most powerful and most overlooked traits. He is also the author of a great book entitled Sensitive: The Hidden Power of the Highly Sensitive Person in a Loud, Fast, Too Much World. Great morning and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Andre.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, the honor is all ours. Kindly share with the listeners and me from what city and state you're speaking from this morning, please.
Currently in St. Paul, Minnesota, which I call home these days, originally from Milwaukee.
Ah, two great cities, certainly. No question about that. Sadly, Andre, we've only got 30 minutes. We could spend hours talking about you, your incredible life, this wonderful book that you've written. We're jumping right into the deep end of the pool. Share with us, please. Why did you write this great book, Sensitive?
Right. I'm a sensitive person myself, and I have been my whole life. But for most of my life, I did not know that. I didn't understand that that's what I was or what that meant. So I remember being as a kid, like being in kindergarten. And when I started kindergarten, I did fine in like the classroom. That was okay. But then we get out on recess, and suddenly you've got hundreds of kids who are screaming, playing, yelling, laughing, running around everywhere. There's balls flying. Sometimes there's fighting. And I would get overstimulated. And I didn't know why. I didn't know that that's what it was, but it was just too much for me, right? And I actually started to run away and hide during recess. And I hid in the only quiet place I could find, which turned out to be a storm sewer opening at near the edge of the school grounds.
Oh my
Probably
God.
should have been sealed up better, but thus it was. So I'd go in there until recess was over. I'd hear the bell and I would come back. It was like, oh, I'm no problem. And eventually the teachers realized where I was going, and that was a big issue. It turns out you're not supposed to do that. That was a call to my parents. That was a big discussion. But I got the message that there was something wrong. I was doing something wrong, right? And it's sort of and I couldn't do that anymore. You get the idea that there's something wrong with you. Because, of course, the overstimulation didn't go away. I just couldn't run off and hide from it anymore. And so I'd feel this overstimulation every single day. And throughout my childhood and my early years, I would say that I really tried to hide my sensitive side. I think especially being a boy, I thought there was something wrong with that. So I would just deny it and downplay it. And it wasn't until I was an adult that I started to get into the science of sensitivity. What makes us sensitive, what that really means, and how it's actually this great strength. And it was only then that I started to embrace being sensitive and realized, wow, there's a lot of gifts to come with this.
No question about that. We are so blessed to have someone of your ilk today on Thank God for Monday. Now, the word sensitive can mean so many different things. What does it mean? Help us out, Andre, to be sensitive. Why is this a good thing? Why is this a strength, please?
Right. This is my favorite question, right? Because when we hear the word sensitive, we tend to think of being weak or fragile, or maybe somebody who overreacts or just can't handle things very well. And that is not what sensitive means, at least as a personality trait. When we talk about being sensitive, it means that you take in more information from the world around you and you do more with it. And what I mean by that is sensitive people are actually wired at a brain level to process all information more deeply, meaning they put more time, more mental effort, more mental resources into sifting through and processing the information that they're pulling in. Same information everyone else has, but just really kind of going a lot deeper with it and seeing maybe details that others miss or connections that other people might not see. And this is just how sensitive people are wired. And the great thing about that is, there's so many different kinds of information that the brain takes in, right? So that includes sensory information, like when I was overstimulated at the playground. So sensitive people tend to be the person who notices like the scratchy texture of a fabric or like those really nice notes of apricot in a fine white wine. They can pick up on those things. But information is also emotional, right? And that's often some of the most important information we have. So sensitive people also pick up more on the social cues and emotional cues of people around them. So if you're a highly sensitive person, you might be the only one who notices that little hint of a smile that flashes across someone's face before they hide it. And you might be the one who realizes, wait, they're lying, or they mean something different than they said, and everyone else just oblivious. And what's cool is that these two kinds of sensitive, right, the physical and the emotional, they're actually two sides of the same trait. And they're so closely connected that in research, we see that if somebody takes a Tylenol to numb their physical pain from a headache, they'll actually score lower on an empathy test until the Tylenol wears off.
Oh
Yeah.
my goodness.
Right.
Could you
It's
share
people
a little
dialed out on everything. Yeah. So you have these two
more
sides, the
about that?
physical, the emotional, and you have a third piece, which is deep thinking. So sensitive people tend to be deep thinkers. And I think this is where a lot of the gifts of being a sensitive person come from.
Wow, that is amazing. Could you share a little bit more about what you just said about someone taking a Tylenol, they'll score differently?
You can take an empathy test, and whatever your score is when you're not on any kind of painkiller, even if you just take a very mild one like Tylenol, it actually does, you'll tend to on average score lower on the same empathy test while you're on that medication, even just for the 3 4 hours it takes before the effects start to wear off. So it's really, when our brains are processing information, they tend to have a certain depth of how deep we're going to go with it. And if your brain is kind of wired to process information more deeply, it's as if the dial is turned up. And that's one of the few things that can turn it down is, if you are on a painkiller or something like that. So, yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's fascinating. Now, you share, certainly, there are a lot of gifts and advantages that come with being sensitive. Share some of these with us today, please, Andre.
Absolutely. So sensitive people tend to notice tiny details and subtle things that, again, that others might miss. And they do make connections between ideas that other people might not see. But this comes out in a lot of ways. All of it's tied to this deep processing. So one, obviously, is creativity. And that's one of the few stereotypes about sensitive people that's true. You think of the sensitive artist, there's something to that. A lot of artists and musicians really are sensitive people. But creativity is not just good for the arts. Creativity is also where innovation comes from. And so sensitivity is very useful in science, technology, and business, where you're seeing solutions other people might not see or having these eureka moments. And there's a lot of the great thinkers throughout history where if you start reading their biography or their journal or interviews with them, you realize, wow, they check a lot of the boxes of being a highly sensitive person. And there is actually a link that we now know scientifically between sensitivity and giftedness. Not all sensitive people have like genius IQs, but on average, people who are gifted tend to score very high for sensitivity. So there's that link there as well. And then we see other things too, right? So that emotional side of sensitivity, it comes with, first of all, just having stronger, richer, deeper emotions, right? Emotions you feel very deeply. And that can be hard sometimes. We're talking about stress, right? You can really struggle with stressful and difficult or sad circumstances. But it also has that side where these powerful emotions, that's where passion comes from. That's how you rally and inspire other people and unite them around something, is you can speak with passion. You can, you know, get everyone connected to the idea that's behind something. And really, it's a powerful trait. This is, you know, what a lot of good leaders have to have. And then we also see something we call sensory intelligence. And this has to do with that physical attunement to the world around you. So sensory intelligence is being highly aware of your physical surroundings, whatever might be going on there. Noticing little noises others miss, noticing textures, details. That's a powerful trait, right? And we often think of sensitive people as being soft, but my co-author, Jen Graneman, and I have spoken to a lot of sensitive people in the military. And they view it as a strength that's helped them be better soldiers and better service members. Because if you think about it, sensory intelligence, well, the military calls that situational awareness. And it's what keeps units alive in combat, right? Because you're noticing, wait, what was that rustle in the bushes? I think there's an ambush up ahead. And then you keep all your buddies alive with yourself. So the military is actually training people to try to be good at something that sensitive people tend to be good at just out of the gate.
Wow, these are all so amazing. And I couldn't help but to think back. I had a 29-year career in pharmaceuticals before becoming a Franciscan Brother of Brooklyn, and the light bulb just went on.
Yep.
Because some of our best researchers, people at the bench, the innovators, I look back and I think they were very, very sensitive individuals. So that was helping them with their creativity, their innovation. For discovering new products and new compounds. That is really, really amazing. Now, if I perceive correctly, Andre, you talk about what you call the sensitive boost effect. What is this boost effect, and how can sensitive people use it, please, to succeed?
Right. So the boost effect, this is one of the, I believe, probably the most powerful gift that sensitive people have. So the boost effect means that sensitive people get a bigger boost from the same kinds of things that would give anyone a little bit of a boost, right? So I'll give an example.
Please.
We all know that if a child has a healthy, safe, supportive home environment, they tend to get better grades at school. Well, it's just across the board on average. If everything else being the same, they'll get better grades at school. So that's true for sensitive kids as well, except for sensitive kids, if you give them that same healthy, supportive, safe home environment, they don't just get like better grades. They tend to go to the top of their class.
Oh, wow. Right?
Rockets them forward. They get a bigger boost out of the same thing. And this is not just for children, right? So across that, we see this in study after study after study. So in teenagers with depression, there was a wonderful study in the UK where they looked at teens in some of the most economically depressed areas of Great Britain, where really, you know, you have a terrible home life. There's a lot of stress in your neighborhood. The school maybe isn't as good. Lots of factors that would make it harder to rebound from depression. And they took a group of depressed teens and they gave all the teens the same depression treatment, this ongoing program that lasted, I forget how many months. And this particular program, it's evidence-based. It's proven to improve outcomes. And sure enough, it did. On average, it helped improve the depression symptoms in these teens. But when they broke these teens up by giving them a personality test and checked them for sensitivity, they saw a different story. Yeah, the program on average helped the teens a little bit, but for the sensitive teens, they tended to fully overcome their depression. They were much more likely to not just improve symptoms, but become depression-free. Not only that, they were the ones who tended to stay depression-free when the scientists would come back and check up like a year later, that kind of thing. Right.
Wow.
So they kept the effects forward and it kept working. Because if you think about it, being sensitive, you are taking in more information from your environment, whatever that environment might be. And sure, if it's a stressful, rough environment, you might struggle more. But if you're getting a supportive environment, you're taking in more of that too. And it's like rocket fuel. And we see the same thing with adults. So the last study I'll mention was just a really interesting study with married couples. And these were couples who were facing a high risk of divorce, and they were all given the same relationship skills training program. Again, proven to work, and it did on average help things. This time, they assessed sensitivity based on the genes of, you know, who had sensitive genes. And the couples who had at least one person in them who is highly sensitive were more likely to save their marriages. And not only that, they actually improved their relationship quality. meaning they didn't just stay together miserably. They actually got happier with their partner.
Oh, my goodness.
The other couples did not have that effect, right? This was specifically, we mostly saw this with the sensitive people. So it's a very powerful trait. The boost effect is something you can activate throughout your life. We can't choose whether we had a certain kind of home environment growing up. I wish we could, but that part's over, right? But throughout your life, you can activate the boost effect. So that means you can do things like seeking out a mentor in your career. You can take career development classes. You can start therapy. You could join a mastermind group. Or one of the most important things you can do is start to look at which of my friends are people who are encouraging and lift me up, and I'm going to spend more time with them. And which of the people in my day-to-day life are people that I feel a little torn down by, and I'm just going to start spending less time with them, you know, and just kind of quietly cut them out. If you cultivate that supportive social group around you, this is a way to activate the boost effect. And if you're a sensitive person, you are walking around with a rocket engine in your back. And the only thing you have to do to ignite it is start to build these sources of support into your life.
Oh, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, this next question I have to ask, because this is something that I've wondered and I just can't figure out. So Andre, help us out, please. Is there a difference between being sensitive and being an introvert? Are all sensitive people introverts? What's the relation? Help us out, please.
Yeah, this is a fun question. So they're two very different traits. And I want to be clear, both traits are normal, healthy personality traits. Really, they're arguably, at least in the case of sensitivity, it's a temperament trait for those who are psychologists listening. But they're both very healthy, normal human traits. And both of them occur on a continuum, right? So if we think of sensitivity, it's sort of this continuum where most people are average. They're in the middle. Some people are low sensitive. That's less common. And then about 30% of people would score as highly sensitive, almost one in three. And that's true for both men and women. Those numbers are the same. And as far as we know, for people of all genders. So it's very common. And there is an overlap, just like there would be between sensitivity and any other personality trait. It's a little bit bigger of an overlap with introverts, but it's not the same thing. And if you think of it this way, right? So being an introvert or an extrovert, that's a social orientation. It's about whether you get your energy from being around people and social time, that's an extrovert, or from quiet time to yourself, that's an introvert.
Oh, okay.
Right? Sensitivity is an orientation towards your environment. And that means that you're taking in more information from any environment, whether there's people in it or not, and you will get overstimulated in any loud, chaotic, fast-paced environment, whether it's social or not. So you can certainly have very overstimulating environments that don't involve people time, right? If you think about just being under a bunch of really aggressive deadlines for work, that can be a source of overstimulation as well as stress. And you can also be with other people without getting overstimulated. So I could be with a couple close friends. We're having meaningful conversations. The setting is quiet and we're having a great time. And a sensitive person could do that, especially if they're a sensitive extrovert, could do that for hours and not get worn out. So it's different in that way. And we actually do see, and we've talked to a lot of sensitive extroverts. And the truth is, they do things a little different than what you think of as your typical extrovert, right? If you're a highly sensitive person who's extroverted, you probably won't do well at a big networking event with 300 people in a conference space, right? Because of course it's overstimulating. But you might still get your energy from people and you might fill up your calendar Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You want to be every evening, if you can, meeting up with one or two or three or four close friends. Instead of a loud bar, you're going to a quiet restaurant or having people over to your home. That's what a sensitive extrovert tends to look like.
Wow, that makes perfect sense. Thank you so very much for that clarification.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, we've spoken a lot about the gifts, the great gifts of being sensitive. Is there any downside? I know this sounds like a stupid question, but is there any downside at all to being sensitive?
No, that's a great question. So yeah, I mean, if you think about any healthy trait, they always come with pros and cons. And there's all these gifts, but there is a price that sensitive people pay. And that price is the overstimulation we've been talking about. And if you think about it, overstimulation is just this built-in tax on having a deep processing mind. Because if your mind is wired to want to process everything deeply, and then you're in a crowded space with bright lights and loud music and lots of people all doing different things around you, and you're trying to focus on a task, but you got somebody else talking to you about something else, you're getting overstimulated because your brain just can't go deep on all of those things at once. And it doesn't want to not go deep. It's built to go deep, right? So sensitive right. people need to be at our best in less stimulating, calm spaces, right? It can be a social space, it can be not a social space. It could be work-related and you have a deadline, or it could be not, but you just don't want to start piling one thing on top of another on top of another. And we tend to struggle if they do pile up like that. So a big important growth point for sensitive people is to start to learn, what are the signs I'm getting overstimulated? It looks different for different people, but it tends to look like it could be fatigue. It could be brain fog. It could be this sense of, I get a squirrel brain where I'm getting really distracted and my brain's bouncing between things.
Oh, wow.
It could be a physical headache I tend to get, other physical symptoms, and just exhaustion, as well as maybe getting irritable, right? And when you're starting to feel the early signs of that is when you need to pay attention and know what you need to do to prevent that overstimulation from setting in. It helps, of course, to take a break, physically move somewhere that's calmer and quieter if you can, even if it's 5 minutes just to go to the quote unquote, go to the bathroom and have some quiet there, whatever you need to do. Yeah.
As we said earlier, April, we're into April Stress Management Month. Do sensitive people handle stress differently, Andre?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so when you're sensitive to everything, right? And it's often a good thing, we talked about that, but it does mean you can end up struggling more in stressful environments. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Part of it, of course, is the overstimulation. Part of it is you do have to be careful in managing your emotions because you have big, strong emotions. And it's very easy, I think, for sensitive people to get stuck in an emotion where it might take longer to get through a period of sadness or being upset or stressed or annoyed than it might take someone else. It's not as easy to move on unless you cultivate some tools to do that, right? So this is something we see with sensitive people. One thing you can do to help with that is to be building the boost effect into your life. If you've already got that supportive group of friends and loved ones around you who really build you up, it's going to be easier to get through stressful periods. But other things are more like more kind of tools, I guess, you can use along the way, right? So one is, of course, managing overstimulation. I recommend across the board, if you can, as a sensitive person, have part of your routine every day involve spending maybe 30 minutes if you can do it, you know, 20 at a minimum, longer if you want to and if you can, spend it in what I call your sensitive sanctuary, right? Where it might be your favorite armchair, it might be your craft room, it might be your home office, your bedroom, whatever it is, that space in your home where you feel just comfortable and at ease, and you're going to just go there and sit. You can listen to music, you can journal if you want to, but I wouldn't do any other activities. You're not scrolling your phone or watching a show or anything else. You're just sitting and letting your mind run, and it's going to get a chance to process all the stuff that it hasn't been able to deeply process. And that's going to allow you to not only get over overstimulation you have already, but it kind of like builds you up to avoid overstimulation that day because you're going in with a fresh, fully rested mind.
So
you can do it before work, you can do it after work, whatever is best, but let your roommate, spouse, family, whoever lives with you, let them know, when I do this each day, don't bother me. I need this time. And when it's over, I'll come out, I'll be available, whatever, but I just need to be left alone quietly for this 30 minutes. That's a really important step.
Terrific advice. Sorry to say, believe it or not, we've only got about 7 minutes. Time's going way too fast, but I've got some important questions to still ask you.
Sure.
Now, you have said, if I understand correctly, men are just as likely to be sensitive as women. But isn't there more of a stigma for sensitive men? Can men learn to embrace their sensitivity instead of suppressing it? If so, how? Help us out here, please, Andre.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've lived through this myself. Yeah, there's absolutely a stigma for, I think there's a stigma for everyone against being sensitive. I think our culture just doesn't want people to be sensitive and we treat it as a bad thing. But it's certainly different for men or women, right? Women are told not to be so sensitive, which is a phrase we should just get rid of. Men are just told not to be sensitive at all. And that's a big problem. So, but we still see, and it's nonetheless, roughly 30% of men do test as highly sensitive. So if you're sensitive, you're going to be sensitive. It's in your genes. This is the way you're wired. And what happens if you try to hide it or downplay it is you cut off all the gifts that come with it, and you end up feeling a little bit out of place, a little bit like you don't fit in for your whole life. And you don't get to have but you still get all the costs that come with it. You'll still get overstimulated, right? You'll still have big feelings. You'll just not have the gifts to go with it because you're denying them. You're shoving them out the door. So it is important to embrace being sensitive. Often men do this by just not using the same words, right? I think on average, sensitive people tend to score very high for empathy, and they tend to have a very empathetic kind of attitude and orientation toward life. Men often don't like that word, right? It sounds feminine. It shouldn't at all. There's nothing, it's a good thing to be empathetic, but it, for whatever reason, we think of it as feminine. So men often don't say that. I personally would not have described myself as a high empathy person for most of my life, not more than anyone else, but I would have said I'm good at reading people.
Oh, wow.
It's called something else, right? You're picking up on the feelings and little tells of everyone around you, right? So it's like, oh, I can notice tells at poker. I'm good at reading people. I'm good at negotiating because they can never pull one over on me. Well, buddy, you might be highly sensitive, right? I think a lot of salespeople are highly sensitive for that reason. It's like you have a way with people. You can get them fired up and excited about something while reading what they're, you know, giving you. That sounds like a highly sensitive person. Yeah, if you have a knack for that, you could be. And the other traits, too, that men take pride in, you know, because what we see is even though 30% of men and 30% of women are sensitive, when they take a sensitivity test and they answer the questions, they answer them differently, right? So women might be more likely to say yes to the questions about emotions and empathy. And men might have just as strong of emotions, but the questions they really check off, the ones they really relate to, are things about the physical sensitivity, right? So if you think about it, that makes sense. A lot of traditional activities, traditional masculine activities, well, if you're good at tracking animals, if you're good at hunting, right? If you can notice the environment around you and have that situational awareness, that all comes down to sensitivity. A lot of things we don't use anymore, but were very important for, you know, traditional male roles historically, you know, noticing, oh, the way the wind is changing, that means it's going to storm. It's like, well, yeah, if you're noticing the way the breeze shifted, they're probably a little more sensitive than other people. You know, so these kinds of things are actually very sensitive traits. We just don't think of them that way. So I would start by embracing the ones that you can relate to. I think it's good to get to a point where you're openly, proudly sensitive. You should be able to say to your male buddies, you know, kind of a sensitive dude. And I'm proud of that because here's what it means I can do. You might be a deep thinker and innovator. You might be very situationally aware and you might have a lot of gifts. But even if you don't use that word, start to embrace what it means.
Two more questions, if I may, please, Andre. First, how can the spouse partner of a highly sensitive person use this great book, Sensitive, to better understand and to help their relationship with a highly sensitive spouse or partner?
Yeah. You know, it's a good question, and it's kind of a two-way street, right? I think the most important thing for the person who, you know, assuming it's a relationship where one person is highly sensitive, one is average or lower sensitivity, and that's a very common match. It's not a bad match. It's oftentimes a nice balance, right? If you're the partner who is just average sensitive or lower sensitivity, you have to think of the sensitivity of your partner as a good thing. There's no other way forward to have a healthy relationship where they feel good about themselves and you guys really, you know, build up each other's strengths and thrive. You need to embrace it. You need to be able to think, wow, they're sensitive and that's why they can do X, Y, and Z things that I like, right? So start to understand it does not mean weak. It does not mean overly emotional. Sometimes it means big emotions, but those emotions might be there for a very good reason, right? So start to view it as a strength. And that's important for the person who is sensitive too, right? If you're not learning to build up your gifts, if you're not embracing your sensitivity, if you're trying to downplay it, you'll, like I said before, you'll still have the downsides, but you won't get to access the gifts. So embrace that sensitivity. That's a big step. Part of it, though, is just getting to know each other's styles, right? I think a sensitive person is not going to do well with being pushed to make an immediate decision. We are deep thinkers. Deep thinking takes time, right? So when you have something you want your partner to do differently, I've told many partners of my own, you know, look, if you are upset about something or if I did something that bothered you, tell me about it. And then do not want me to say yes, no, okay, I'll do it different, anything at all until the next day. If you just tell me about it and I can absorb it, the next morning, I'm probably going to come to you 95% of the time and I'll say, you know what? You're right. I'm sorry about that. I'll just do it different. But if you want the answer right now, I have not processed it yet. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, maybe I don't know. So you have to give them a little time to think and absorb things when possible. That's a really helpful thing. And remember that they crave depth. This is the number one thing sensitive people really crave in the world in general, in their lives, but especially in their relationships, right? Now, sensitive people at work, they want a job that has a purpose, it has a meaning. Well, at home, they want a relationship that's deep and meaningful. So it's not just the casual chit-chat, it's those deep conversations. Not everyone loves those, and you can't have them 24/7, but whenever possible, if they're asking you deeper questions, if they want to have a bigger conversation, if they're looking to talk about emotions, whatever it might be, go deep with them. You know, make space to do that, and it's going to really pay off.
Ah, that's terrific. We've saved the most important question for last, Andre. From where can our loyal listeners purchase Sensitive? How can they best follow you, please?
Absolutely. So Sensitive is out in stores now. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookseller, anywhere books are sold. And you can find us at sensitiverefuge.com or at sensitiverefuge on any social platform.
Terrific. Listeners, no excuse. Andre's given us a lot of nuggets these last 30 minutes, but let's keep the conversation going. Don't hesitate to reach out to him. And yes, indeed, this book has changed my life. I want you to buy at least one copy, and don't hesitate to buy more. Give them as nice gifts to those who are sensitive or maybe those who are not, so they can appreciate more this great gift of being sensitive. Andre Solo, we can't thank you enough for gracing our airwaves today, and thank God for Monday. We've been enlightened, yes, we've been inspired. I had no idea how important, until I picked up your book, this sensitivity is. I'm sure our audience feels the same. So continued joy and success and great contribution, all this fabulous, groundbreaking, unique work that you're doing, sir.
Thanks.
Listeners, guess what? Once again, we're out of time. Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Andre does, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Until next week's episode, have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.